the COVID pandemic and economic disruption added uncertainty for a lot of people about whether they could afford housing. And some housing advocates say that added to existing problems with housing availability, affordability, and stability, especially for renters. According to studies, housing is a big concern for Americans, especially since the pandemic increased some people's concerns of getting evicted after an eviction moratorium expired late last year. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you rent your home or did you in the past? Have you had concerns about not knowing where you're going to live next year, next month? How often do you or did you change where you're renting? Do you wish leases could be longer than 1 year in Wisconsin? If you're a property owner yourself, do you offer longer leases? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Chris Kirko is the founder of the Milwaukee Community Land Trust and president of Housing for All. Chris, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
I've talked to you in the past, Chris, about housing affordability and availability. This concept of stability and or instability, can you talk about what that means?
Sure. Yeah. So a lot of times the idea of stability gets lost because the issue of affordable housing is so, it's such a big issue and rent controls are so controversial. But really, at least half the story is this issue of housing stability. And so there's a lot of data that show that this is a problem. So according to the Census Bureau, in the 2010s, 20 to 26% of renters moved every single year. That's very difficult to imagine that 20 to 20% of all renters move every single year. By comparison, only 5% of homeowners moved each year over that time period. And we know from other data that the renters, they're not moving because they want to move. They're moving because they have to move. But the Census Bureau, and I'm quoting here, they said that over the 2010s, we had, quote, historically low rates of renters moving. And in recent decades, before the 2010s, it was actually 30 to 35% of renters that were moving every year, or just an eye-popping one-third of renters every year have to move. And that was versus 6 to 8% of homeowners moving every year. So that is just mind-boggling. And so another way to look at those numbers is that a typical renter will move every 3 years. So there's a lot of data that shows that this issue of housing stability in the rental housing market is very important.
I know it can take a while to crunch numbers from federal agencies and things like that. Do we have a sense of what that trend has looked like, you know, in the midst of the pandemic and in the couple of years since that got started?
I think we're waiting on the American Housing Survey to come out. It'd be really interesting to see how the pandemic did affect that.
Looking at the impact, I remember, you know, renting in my younger days, in my 20s, I was just a dude. It wasn't necessarily a big deal for me to move. Families who are not having predictable housing or having to relocate again and again, what do we know about the impact that can have on them, especially with younger kids?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think the important thing to remember, like I said, the data say that a typical renter will move every 3 years, but you can lose a lot of the story if you're only looking at averages. So on our website, you can check us out. Easy to remember, Housing for Us, housing4.us. We interviewed somebody who moved 9 or 10 times between the ages of 0 and 18. He moved so many times as a kid that he couldn't even remember how many apartments or, you know, how many homes he had lived in. And let's be really clear, he was never once evicted, right? His mom had a full-time job. This is not the sort of family that's supposed to be having problems with housing. And so you can hear in his own words how challenging that was to live through that. And then the Milwaukee Community Land Trust, we had a ribbon cutting for our very first home just last week. And the mayor of Milwaukee came to speak because this issue is very close to him. And he told us about how he moved actually even more frequently when he was a child. He moved almost every year And he talked about having to switch schools a half dozen times. So just imagine how difficult it is being the new kid at school, just how difficult the process of moving is, how it's just, you know, impossible to form a sense of neighborhood or a sense of community or even to just make friends if everybody's constantly moving. And it's all unnecessary. We could fix this today if we wanted to. It's all unnecessary.
Yeah. Before we get to that, the fixes you have in mind, as you mentioned, this isn't necessarily a story of people being evicted and having to find a new place. What is driving the need to move again and again, even if people would love to stay in one rental for 5, 10, 15 years?
Yeah. So it turns out there's not a lot of research on this. The author of Evicted, which won a Pulitzer Prize, Matthew Desmond, he was the author of a paper, the only one that I really found. He seemed also quite astonished at the lack of research. And so in the introduction, and I'm quoting from this, researchers had altogether stopped collecting data on forced moves. Instead of asking households to articulate their reasons for moving, researchers began inferring such reasons from aggregate patterns of neighborhood turnover. But what he found in this study, which was of Milwaukeeans over the years 2009 to 2011, he found that 14% of moves were forced. So that would be an eviction, whether legal or illegal eviction, a landlord foreclosure, or the building was condemned. So that was 14% of moves. And then the rest of this is kind of, I think, unsatisfying. So he classified the rest of the moves 40% as responsive and 46% as voluntary. The responsive moves included things like the landlord raises rent to an unaffordable level. The housing is so low quality that people wanted to move out. A lack of response to maintenance requests. Unsafe conditions. Unsanitary conditions. You know, those sound like forced moves to me. And then for the 46% that was voluntary, people didn't feel safe and they moved to a safer neighborhood. Maybe they moved in with relatives for financial reasons, or they were moving out from living with relatives because it's hard living with relatives. Among the voluntary, the ones that did seem actually voluntary were family changes, right? So somebody got married, a child was born, and they needed a bigger place. But for the most part, the vast majority of tenant moves are not for good reasons, like, you know, a marriage or the birth of a child. The moves are things like the housing was low quality, the rent got raised past what they could afford, it was unsafe, so, you know, something like that.
We're talking about housing instability, especially among renters. Chris Kirko is with us with the Milwaukee Community Land Trust and Housing for All. You can join in if you have a story to share, a question at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Andy is with us in Appleton. Andy, hi.
Hey, pleasantries, Rob and Chris from Appleton. I have... we're so sick of the elections, but I do have an election-related question to renters. I know the Marquette Law poll said that when the voter ID was implemented in Wisconsin, that it really suppressed votes, especially in urban areas. My first thought was, that's renters. And, Rob, when you said you're in your 20s, you moved a lot. I don't know if you changed your ID every time. The voter
not.
ID, you might be discouraged from voting because you have to go through all that to get a proper ID that shows your proper address, even though you might be moving in 6 months, and it's kind of a hassle to do that. So I kind of love conspiracy theories and is always suspicious that voter ID was intended to make it easier for the suburbs, the homeowners, to vote, whereas renters and students would not even show up because they didn't want to jump over the obstacle.
Andy,
to show up.
I gotcha. Thanks for the call. Chris, I don't know if you have thoughts on voter ID in particular, but it does raise the question. There's a lot of things in our lives that we need to tell people our address for and register via our address. If you're moving every year, say, that can be hard to do.
Right. Yeah. It's just a major headache. I don't have information kind of at my fingertips about that particular issue. But I do know that housing affects voting quite a bit. There was a study that was done very recently by researchers at UWM and Marquette that found that more foreclosures actually depressed voter turnout as well. So They're, you know, housing is just fundamental to everything that we do and everything that we are. And, you know, including just getting out to vote without, you know, without stable housing. I think it's clear that even something like voting is affected by the instability of our housing system.
Andy, thanks for the call. We're talking to Chris Kirko, founder of the Milwaukee Community Land Trust, president of Housing for All, looking at renting stability and instability in the United States. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're currently renting, do you feel like you're in a stable place for the long haul? Or do you feel like every year you're trying to reinvent the wheel? Have you had to move in your life at some point because the rent went up underneath you or the house was sold out from underneath you? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Coming up, what if leases were longer? We'll hear some examples from Europe coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up the conversation with Chris Kirko, founder of the Milwaukee Community Land Trust, president of Housing for All, looking at renting stability and instability in Wisconsin and the United States. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you experienced this as a renter in your life? Uncertainty as to where you're going to live next year, next month? Are you renting now? Have you in the past? What did you like about it? What didn't you? Do you wish you could get longer leases? If you're someone who rents properties, what kind of things do you see that may make it hard to provide a stable year-to-year environment for tenants? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Quick follow-up from our previous caller for voter ID. You don't need to change your driver's license when you move to vote, but you do have to prove residency and still, of course, have that photo ID. Now, Chris, we've talked in the past. You compared and contrasted renting in the United States as compared to some European countries. You found some interesting things, I understand, when it comes to the length of leases.
Yeah, that's right. You know, one thing we talk about a lot is just living in the United States, our housing system just seems normal, like, you know, the way it's supposed to be. But it's actually, our housing system is really, really extreme in how unregulated it is once we start looking at the rest of the world. And this is a really good example of that. So in Germany, Switzerland, Sweden, Austria, and the Netherlands, leases have no end date. So to try to give an idea of how this works, generally, if you're a tenant and you want to move, you have to give 3 months' notice to the landlord. The landlord, on the other hand, has no right to end that lease. So if a renter wants to stay there for 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, 60 years, the landlord has no right to stop them. And actually, in Germany and Austria, children can inherit leases from their parents in a way analogous to children inheriting a home from their parents who are homeowners. And it's not unusual for people who could afford to become homeowners to choose to rent instead because it's just so favorable to be a renter. And so, you know, it's been this way for many, many decades, right? So, for example, in Austria, this law was first passed in 1917, so more than a century ago. So a lease can be ended against the tenant's wishes. It's not totally absolute, right? There are just a few exceptions that are pretty logical. So the three are, so the first is if, say, the landlord's house burns down and the landlord finds himself homeless, that would be a situation where the landlord could end the lease against the tenant's wishes because the landlord himself needs a place to live. The other way is non-payment of rent. And so if it, but even there, you know, this is a lot less strict than the United States. So for example, if a tenant in Germany has to fall behind on rent for more than the sum of 2 months of rent. So as long as they're making kind of some payments, they can be behind on rent for a pretty long time, as long as the sum that they're behind is not more than 2 months. Now, if we contrast this to Wisconsin, even if you're a minute late or a penny short on rent, the landlord can charge you a $50 fee, and then you have 5 days to make good on that. So if you can't find the money in 5 days, you're evicted. And then the third reason that a lease could be ended against the tenant's wishes in these countries would be if the tenant is destroying property. And that's pretty logical. But, you know, again, it's much more strict than in the United States, right? We have found examples of people being evicted because they didn't pick up their dog poop or trim their bushes. And I am not in support of people not picking up their dog poop, but to make somebody homeless over dog poop is pretty outrageous. So, you know, big picture, if you sign a rental agreement to rent an apartment in these countries, you basically, you know, as long as you keep your nose clean, you can stay there as long as you want, and you might even be able to pass it on to your children. You could be there for decades.
I imagine the argument against that from property owners and others might be, okay, if I'm going into this business and there are these restrictions that limit what I can do with my property, that limit my ability to, change what happens on this lot that I own, that might be a disincentive. It might lead people to not want to go into the landlording business in the first place and might result in less available housing.
Yeah, so that's an interesting point. So in the German constitution, right, they identify housing as being, or real estate as being, fundamentally different from other types of property, right? Because shelter is a basic human need. So maybe housing shouldn't be a business at all. There's examples of municipally owned housing or public housing or not-for-profit housing or nonprofits running housing that are able to be financially self-sustaining and even thrive, renting fairly to people. We have more information on our website about this, but so much of the money that goes into, or like the loans that supports private housing, is actually owned by the federal government through Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. It's guaranteed, the mortgages are guaranteed by the federal government. So, there is public money that could step in if landlords decided this is just too much. But again, you also have to think this is the way it works in several different countries, and it's been working for a very, very long time, and there's no reason we couldn't do something like that here.
Talking to Chris Kirko with the Milwaukee Community Land Trust, president of Housing for All, looking at renting instability in Wisconsin and beyond. Chris, that might seem like a tall order to pass something like that in Wisconsin and the United States, that life lease. Short of that, what kind of solutions do you think we could have to deal with concerns about instability in rental housing?
Sure. So it turns out that contracts without an end date are actually illegal in the United States. But the state of Oregon, just in the past few years, passed a law that says that if a landlord does not renew a lease, or if they increase rent by more than 10%, the landlord has to pay the tenant a $4,500 fee for moving expenses. And so in practice, this means that the lease lasts forever, right? It's just that the lease is 1 year, but it renews every single year, unless that landlord is willing to pay that hefty fine. And so that's kind of one way to get around it.
Are we seeing actions like that in other states? Are other states looking at Oregon and saying, could we do that too?
So I've been surprised at the number of places that have passed rent controls and landlord-tenant protections. But as far as a statewide effort like that is, that was pretty spectacular. I'm not aware of any other like big state-level initiatives like that.
And I wanted to ask, in our last few minutes, you mentioned that housing opening just last week, I think you said. Can you tell us a little bit about that and the work you're doing?
Yeah, of course. Speaking of, difficulties with the rental housing system, one way, if we're not able to improve our rental housing system, is to help people to escape the rental housing system, really, and become homeowners. And so this particular house is being sold at an affordable price, right? $80,000 for a very nice house, and it's reserved for low-income families. And it will be forever reserved for affordable housing for low-income families. And it's really a cause that is worth supporting.
And are you looking to scale that up, to do more of these?
Oh, yeah. So I'm kind of more involved on the administrative side, but I know there is funding for another 24 houses in the next couple of years. And there's a lot in the works. It really is a cause that's worth supporting.
And do you have any thoughts if a renter is listening and concerned about instability, are there resources out there for them?
I know in Milwaukee, the social development condition, or excuse me, the SDC, the Social Development Commission, the community advocates are good resources. I unfortunately don't know about resources in the rest of the state, but I know that they're there. It was local agencies that were tasked with distributing emergency rental assistance during the pandemic. So, you know, I know these agencies exist all throughout the state, but unfortunately I don't know how to find the ones outside of Milwaukee.
Chris, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
That's Chris Kirko, founder of the Milwaukee County Land Trust and the president of Housing for All. He joined us today to talk about renting stability and instability in the United States and how uncertain renting conditions can affect tenants.